welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Today is Friday, July 22nd, and Allison, Tara, and I, your co-host, Carissa Thorpe, are all off in California right now.
Woohoo, California!
At the annual Animal Rights National Conference. So what we've done here is we've pre-recorded an encore presentation of some of our interviews, and this episode that you're listening to today is our animal summer safety. So we're going to be listening to an interview we did about bear safety while you're out in the woods, because it's very important this time of year, as well as how to keep your dog cool in summertime and not lock your dog in a car because it's very dangerous. And we're also going to hear about the dangers of having a dog in the back of your pickup truck.
Dogs in the car.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say I learned a lot from all of these interviews. So it's really good stuff. So
yeah. So if you haven't heard it before, you should definitely listen. And even if you have, I'm sure there's lots of stuff that it's good to have a reminder about. So we're going to start now with the first one, which is dogs in pickup trucks and why that's not a very good idea. All right. Recently, I got into a heated debate with three guys when we passed an unrestrained dog in the back of a pickup on the Sea to Sky Highway, who was walking back and forth in the box of the truck, and he was looking all around him. I made some comment that was more to myself than to anyone else about how that was sad, and everyone interjected that I don't know what I'm talking about, and this is how dogs are meant to be, and that the dog was living the life and having a great time.
Well, there's a bylaw against that,
yeah.
So you could have reported that person's license plate.
And while to some dogs and trucks might seem to make a lot of sense, particularly in smaller communities where the practice of dogs in the back of a pickup is a common sight, the case is not so. The truth of the matter is that unsecured dogs in the back of a truck or other vehicle pose dangers not only to the dogs but also to humans. If a dog jumps, falls, or is thrown from a moving vehicle, he or she could sustain serious or deadly injuries and could potentially cause a collision with other motorists. The consequences, in addition to the loss of a beloved companion, could be hefty veterinary bills or financial responsibility in the event of a motor vehicle accident. Proper restraint is not only essential and life-saving, but it's also the law under the Motor Vehicle Act of British Columbia, which states in Section 72 with regards to the transportation of animals that a person commits an offense if the person transports a living animal on the running board, fender, hood, or other exterior part of a motor vehicle unless a suitable cage, carrier, or guardrail is provided and is attached adequately to protect that animal from falling or being thrown from the vehicle. Fines start at $109 in British Columbia. The BCSPCA website highlights the necessity of proper restraint, stating that dogs restrained with loose ropes or ties can accidentally hang themselves. Additionally, animals exposed to the elements could potentially suffer heat stroke or hypothermia, depending on the weather conditions at the time. And if your pet is injured while traveling in your vehicle, you can be charged with cruelty to animals under the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act. Unrestrained animals are distractions to drivers, both yourself and other motorists, which can cause vehicle collisions. Also important to note is that in the event of a car crash, pets become flying objects and have the potential to cause injury to both themselves and others. According to the BCSPCA website, a pet weighing 50 pounds and traveling at 50 kilometers per hour weighs approximately 1 ton upon impact. Mm. The best solution is to take your dog inside the vehicle with you and employ the use of a dog seat belt or secured crate, or if the dog must be in the box of the truck, the safest thing to do is to put him or her in a crate secured in the middle of the box against the cab, and the very least of all precautions should be to tether your dog using a dog seat belt in the back of the box. There's little doubt that motorists who are transporting their dogs in such a dangerous way love their animals, as the fact they're taking the dog with them proves, but education and proper forethought are the keys to avoiding needless tragedies. Many people view their animals like children, yet surely you'd be hard-pressed to find so many people willing to endanger their children's lives the way many do their pets. You're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM, CFRO in Vancouver, BC.
Thank you so much for that, Carissa. I see people do that once in a while in Vancouver. Usually they come from like Abbotsford or something. Yeah. You know, they have the big trucks and the dog. And one time I rolled down my window. It was in the middle of the winter. And I said to this woman, I'm like, hey, you got your dog in the back of the truck. She's like, so who cares? And I said, well, it's against the law. And she's just like waving me off. And I said, I got your license plate. And then she started apologizing. She said, oh, geez, I didn't know there was a law against it. So it's good to call on these people, call on the police or the SPCA.
I definitely would have called the police if she hadn't said anything in that instance. If she'd been just brushing
off. I call the SPCA and...
Is that the actual place to call?
Well, you know what? I don't think they ever do anything. I every time I call them, it's just I just leave a message and I don't think anything ever gets followed up on.
I would call the non-emergency police number.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do next time.
All right, so we just heard about... dogs in the back of pickup trucks and why it's not a very good idea. And Joanne was mentioning that she called the SPCA, but I'm thinking that the line that she must be calling is probably the non-emergency line, and that's why it's just a voicemail message. I think that's how they have it set up, is if it's not an emergency but you want to report some sort of cruelty.
So there is an emergency line? I wasn't aware of that.
I believe there is, and they will pick up. I think I've talked to someone before.
Okay,
so
good to know.
I don't have that info, but we could probably post it on our Facebook for people. I think the right thing to do would be to call the police, because recently I shared it a few weeks ago on the show that I had called the police about a dog that was locked in a car in an underground parkade, and they responded.
You shared that on the show? Because I didn't hear that. Yeah. Maybe I was too busy.
You might not have been there that day.
Oh, okay.
But
I was there. But okay, so what happened?
The police didn't actually get there before the person came back to their car and left, so I called the police back and said, like, you know, he left. But I got a call the next day from the SPCA because they're following up with them.
Oh, that's...
Like, when I called back to the police and said, you know, the person has left now and he's swearing at me and all of this, they said, okay, well, we're going to follow up with him. We have his license plate. We'll find a way to get in touch with him and sort out this issue from
that's
here.
Really
and then the
know,
SPCA
Chris,
called me the next day
and
asked for some more details because they were going to go and talk to him. So,
thanks for doing that, not only just for in the interest of that dog and the owner, but also to share with us what your experience was like, not you know, being the first time that that's ever you've ever actually done that, and to see that there were results.
Yeah.
That's really
I was really impressed
now
when the SPCA phoned the next day.
Right.
I wasn't really
expecting
that.
And the police would have been on the way, right? Because I know we were talking about before, you know, sometimes, you know, people yelling at you and that it's maybe not a confrontation that most people would want to get into. Most people don't want to get into other people's business, but do recognize when an animal is in a harmful situation, so they want to do something. So, and as there is a bylaw about it, as Joanne had pointed out in that talk, call the police.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that they responded. Yeah. And was that in Vancouver? Or
that was in Burnaby. I was at Metrotown and somebody,
so
I had never seen a dog locked inside a car in an underground parkade. And
that arcade is hot.
It was really hot. And that's what the SPCA said when I talked to them the next day, was that that can actually, it can even be hotter in there than outside. Because that was his defense was, oh, the dog's underground in the shade rather than out
in
the sun.
We've got an interview coming up about that. So.
Yeah. So I think we'll listen to that one now about why you shouldn't lock your dog in the car and how to keep your dog cool in summer.
So now we have on the line our next guest. So, summertime. What do you associate the summer season with? Going to the beach or swimming in the lakes? My favorite summer activity is definitely eating watermelon. But summer is not always a happy season for our companion animals if we, as their guardians, are careless. Each year, countless number of dogs, for example, die from heat exhaustion after being left in parked cars. Our next guest, Nicole Forsyth, is joining us to speak about the My Dog is Cool campaign. Nicole is the president of and CEO of United Animal Nations, an organization that focuses on bringing animals out of crisis and strengthening the bond between people and animals through a variety of programs, including emergency, sheltering, disaster relief services, and financial assistance and education. Welcome to Animal Voices, Nicole.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So how common and widespread is this problem of dogs being left in hot cars in the summer?
Unfortunately, there's not a lot of good data. A lot of the local animal control agencies receive hundreds of calls, but there's no central database to track all of this.
Mm-hmm.
We follow a lot of news articles, you know, across the country during the summer months, and it's amazing how many we see, and that's just an indication of the ones that actually get reported by the media, which means there's probably thousands every year.
Right. Can you give us an example of an incident that happened recently this summer?
Yes, actually, there was just a recent one that was in Austin, Texas, of a dog whose name was Stedman, and his owner left him in the car for, he says, about 20 minutes while he went into a store. And some other person saw the dog in the car, was obviously in distress, was having seizures at that point, which is not a good sign. And so he called 911, which is definitely the right thing to do. But by the time the fire department came and broke into the car, the dog was alive but in really, you know, horrible condition. They took the animal to the vet. The dog had an internal temperature of 43 degrees Celsius, which is way higher than, you know, a dog's normal body temperature ranges between 38 and 39 degrees Celsius. And the dog had to be euthanized shortly after arriving.
Oh my God.
He was suffering from heat stroke, seizures, vomiting. His body was covered with broken blood vessels. So it is not a good idea to leave a dog in a hot car. It's really a horrible thing to imagine a dog being trapped in a car when they can't get out, they can't control their own life. They depend on us to take care of them. So it's really unfortunate to hear these stories.
And that was just for 20 minutes, right? And, you know, I think the danger of leaving dogs in cars is that it's a difficult situation to assess. Like, most people living in mild climates, like in Vancouver, can probably leave their dogs in a car while they go pick something up in the store for about, you know, like 8 to 9 months of the year without having anything bad happen to their dogs. So when the weather starts to get warmer, they may not even think about it. So how does someone know when it's too hot to leave their dog in the car?
Well, we recommend, you know, to be on the safe side, to never leave your dog unattended. I mean, that's just kind of a sort of the best way to do it.
Okay.
You never know what's going to happen to you. You could get, you know, sidetracked. You could end up meeting someone in the store or suffering a long line at the cash register.
Mm.
So it's always a good idea to, you know, it's the best plan is to leave your dog at home where they're safe. But if you have to bring your dog out with you, our website, actually, mydogiscool.com, has a really neat tool. It's a weather tool where you can put in your zip code. And I don't know if it works in Canada. I have to check on that. I didn't ask about that. But you can put in probably a zip code for a similar, you know, Seattle area and find out whether it's too hot to bring your car that day.
Yeah.
So it just kind of has an automatic tool there, which is really nice. But just for an example, you know, even when it's 22 degrees Celsius outside, the car inside can get to be 47 degrees Celsius within 1 hour, even if the windows are cracked. So, you know, even a relatively mild day, if you're going to be long, you know, or you think you're going to be only gone for a little bit, but it's actually going to be longer, it could still be pretty dangerous.
Wow.
I think people just really don't have any idea, first of all, how hot it can get in the car, but also how difficult it is for dogs to respond to warm temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like people. They actually can't dissipate heat the same way as humans. They don't sweat. They have to dissipate all their heat through panting. Some of it is dissipated through the pads of their feet. So I think people have this you know, myth that they're tougher than us, and actually,
right,
when it comes to heat, they're very vulnerable.
Huh, didn't know that. Now, I'm one of those people who never miss an opportunity to approach someone who leave their dogs in the car in warm, sunny weather. But, you know, often my concerns are met with angry dog guardians who say things like, I've left the window open a crack and I haven't left him long enough for there to be a concern. Do you think there's a cause for concern when people leave their dogs in the car on a sunny day with the window cracked open?
Yes, it's still, there's a study done by Stanford University that demonstrated that even if you crack the windows, it makes very little difference in the temperature in the car.
Okay, unless the window is wide open and the dog can actually jump out.
Right, if they could escape, then maybe that would be different, but then you've got another issue on your hands.
Right. Now, you have UAN has a very striking campaign poster with a photo of a dog inside an oven, and the caption on the poster reads, "A hot oven or a hot car, it's the same thing." Would you say that analogy is an exaggeration?
I wouldn't say so at all. I mean, given how hot, you know, if it's 85 degrees outside, the temperature inside a car can become, 29 degrees Celsius, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It can become 48 degrees Celsius in half an hour out in the car. So that's pretty warm. It's getting to be oven-like temperatures. I mean, it's still relatively lower than an oven, but it can be really, really hot inside a car.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of physical signs do dogs show when they are overheating?
Excessive panting, then maybe you might see some drooling, increased heart rate, trouble breathing. They may look really disoriented. Eventually, they'll have some sort of seizure or loss of consciousness, look like they're having a hard time breathing. You know, if those things are happening, it's at that point they're suffering already from heat stroke, so you'd want to be taking, you know, getting them to the vet really quickly. I think that's the other thing people don't realize, that, you know, we hear about all these cases where dogs have died, but there's also these cases where, you know, people may think their dog's okay, but, you know, if they're exposed to heat for a certain amount of time, they can only withstand an increase in body temperature for a short while before they experience medical problems. So people may not even realize their dog is suffering from some liver damage or heart damage or other kinds of nerve damage caused by being left in hot environments.
Do you know how many minutes a dog can be overheating before they die or suffer severe injuries?
It's minutes. I mean, they can't, as soon as their body gets, so their internal temperature is between 38 degrees and 39 degrees Celsius, and once they get up to the 41, 42 degree range, once they have that excessive heat build up and they can't dissipate it, the body's cells actually start to not work properly and then release some dangerous chemicals, and that starts to cause the nerve damage and the liver damage and other damage. So it's pretty quick. I mean, people may have even seen, you know, humans have experienced heat stroke. It can come on pretty quickly, and then once you know if you don't alleviate that condition fast, then it can lead to some problems quickly.
So it sounds like there's not even enough time if you call the SPCA or the police. What should someone do if they see a dog in a parked car in the summer?
Definitely try to, you know, call 911 or call a local animal control agency. If you've caught it soon enough, you know, if they're just at the stage where they're panting, you know, that should be enough time. But if they're getting to that state where they're having seizures and vomiting, as in the case of the dog Stedman, then, you know, we're talking some really immediate needs. You know, this dog was rushed to the veterinary clinic, and still the damage was too severe. He had to be euthanized. But I think if you can get him early enough, you know, just seeing the dog in a car before they're suffering a lot of symptoms, then you should be okay. The other idea we tell people is to go into the store and try to make an announcement. You have to get the license plate and description of the car, make an announcement, and then hopefully you can get the people to come out sooner. We definitely try to coach people that they should make those interactions with people as positive as possible, so you don't get the defensive attitudes, you know, telling people, we know you must love your dog, you brought your dog out with you, I just wanted to let you know, here's a flyer, we have flyers and cards that you can download from our website or order from our website, and that just has some really non-confrontational public education information. So, you know, handing that to them and say, hey, look, you know, you just may not be aware of how hot the car really can get, and I just wanted to share this information with you. And so hopefully that will make them think twice.
Nicole, I'm just curious about calling 911. I've always been under the impression that that is only to serve human beings. Is that not the case if you're calling about a trapped dog in a car, which is, you know, a serious problem?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, where you're located. You know, sometimes 911 is really the only response agency. But if you're somewhere with, you know, a major metropolitan area where there's an animal control agency that's ready to respond.
Well, you wouldn't even have that number on hand, right? Everyone knows 911, and that seems like an obvious choice. But I would just be worried if a 911 operator would say, you know, we don't serve dogs. So that's why I'm asking.
Hopefully they would you know, direct you to the animal control.
Okay.
I would imagine they'd have a switchboard that can do that pretty quickly.
Okay.
It should be taken seriously. It's you know, it is illegal. It's considered animal cruelty. So it is someone breaking the law. So hopefully they take it seriously. And, you know, I guess just keep calling places. The 911 operator is not responsive. Maybe try calling again. Get the local police number if the 911 number is not working, or find that animal control agency number.
Yeah, that's actually my next question. Can a person be charged for killing their dog by leaving him or her in the car?
Yes, in this case in Texas, the person, you know, each state or, you know, province has different laws regarding what kinds of consequences would come about by animal cruelty conviction. But in this case, if he was arrested and charged with animal cruelty, the person responsible for leaving Stedman in the car, so if he's convicted, he could face a two-year prison sentence and a $10,000 fine.
Wow, that's...
So that'll be up to the judge to determine whether to do the full prosecution.
That's probably a lot more stricter than what we have in Canada, but that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
Do you have some tips for keeping dogs cool in the summer?
Yeah, definitely having access to water. You know, again, as I said before, with the panting and having them drink water, that can really help them cool down. Also, if there's an access to water where they can put their feet in it, since their feet also can dissipate that heat, water is really the best way for them to stay cool. Having a shady location if they have to be outdoors at all, hopefully indoors in an air conditioned environment if it's really, really hot outside. Older dogs or dogs with really thick coats or short snouts are particularly sensitive to that. So, you know, people being more conscious of senior dogs, making sure you avoid hot asphalt. I think sometimes people forget that, you know, dogs aren't wearing shoes, and the heat of the pavement can get really hot fast. So being conscientious about that can help too.
I see that all the time, and my coworker actually has a dog, and I said, don't you think that it hurts them? And she's like, oh no, they're tough. So it's
I've seen burns on their pads. You know, their pads are tougher than our hands, but they still can suffer damage and can burn.
That's good information. Now, besides the My Dog is Cool campaign, UAN has does some really amazing rescue work. Now, I know this because I'm a proud volunteer.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the rescue work that you do?
Sure. Well, our Emergency Animal Rescue Service program, our EARS program, that goes and does some temporary sheltering for animals, and it can be during like a natural disaster or a criminal seizure case, so for puppy mills or hoarding cases, any time where a large number of animals need some temporary sheltering before they can be placed into new rescue homes or shelter environments until they can find new homes. It used to be that a lot of these animal control agencies, local animal authorities would they didn't want to deal with these cases like puppy mills or any time where they had to do a criminal investigation because they didn't know what they were going to do with the dogs. You know, most shelters are overwhelmed already, and so what are they going to do with 200 dogs? You know, they don't want to have to euthanize them, and so they kind of look the other way when they see animal cruelty going on in their community. So this has been a great service for local agencies. It's wonderful for the volunteers because they get to really get some hands-on. It's an incredible experience to watch a dog who's been in one of these horrible, horrible intensive breeding environments, fur matted, stuck to the cage, pregnant over and over and over and over again, just no socialization with humans, just these poor, poor, poor dogs. And then these volunteers come in, they clean them all up, put them into new cages, spend time with them, and they just turn around. I mean, they're so forgiving, and they so are ready to be loved once they kind of get used to everything. And so for the volunteers, it's a really amazing experience to put a lot of hard work. You know, there's a lot of sweat and labor that goes into taking care of these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dogs sometimes at a time. And then the payoff is seeing them turn around and seeing those eyes come back to life. It's just amazing.
I know I went on a UAN rescue in Washington last year, and that was the most amazing experience, even though I was covered in dog poop for like 4 days. But, you know, that I would not give that experience for anything. It was so wonderful.
We hear that a lot. It's amazing. Volunteers give up their vacation time and travel a long way sometimes to do hard physical labor for very long days, all because of the reward that they get from seeing these animals. Just their lives are turned around. It's amazing.
And where do these animals go after they have been rescued?
They get placed in other rescue organizations or shelters, depending on, you know, usually they have to go to many different places to kind of spread it out a little bit. But we always we work with the Humane Society of the United States, and they help connect these animals with various placements.
That's great. Do you know roughly about how many rescue operations you do each year?
It's averaging about one a month.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been very busy. A couple times we've done two or three at a time, which gets to be really challenging, but it's an average of of one a month, and last year we did 17, so that was actually more than one a month.
Wow. And what situations are you rescuing these animals from mostly?
Well, it seems puppy mills is probably the number one thing next to hoarding.
Wow.
Sometimes it's just a cruelty charge and a neglect charge. We did a case with horses where there were, I think it was over 50 different equines, horses, donkeys, and this, it was just a matter of severe neglect. These horses were not being fed or not being taken care of, and so there were criminal charges brought against the owner of these horses, and we went in and temporarily sheltered them until we had custody, until the Humane Society of the United States got custody of them and we could find placements for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, can someone adopt animals rescued by your organization?
Not directly from us, but they could certainly, if they hear about a particular response we're doing, they could definitely contact us. And, you can hear about any latest responses on our website, which is uan.org. And if you wanted to know more about that particular response or where the animals went, you could contact us through that website and find out.
I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, how can someone get involved with your organization?
Yes, definitely. Always looking for more volunteers. Our website, www.uan.org. If they wanted to become a EARS volunteer, there's some information about how to become a volunteer. We also have a humane education program that's called HEAR, which gets a little confusing, HEAR and EARS. That's Humane Education Ambassador Readers, and we train volunteers how to use stories and discussion to build empathy in children.
Great.
It's a very intensive, very rewarding program as well. A lot of volunteers, they love doing the hands-on thing, but then they sometimes get a little overwhelmed with seeing case after case, and they want to do something that they feel like prevents cruelty in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So HEAR is a great option for those people. And if you like kids and want to go into classrooms, that's also a good fit there. And so they can learn more about that program on the website and become a HEAR volunteer. We'll be having a Sacramento, California workshop coming up pretty soon, so that's a good chance to get involved with that. And certainly people want to just find out what we're doing. Connecting through Facebook is a great option. That's facebook.com/UnitedAnimal. So that's another way people can follow what we're doing.
Great.
We're on Twitter as well. And we love to engage people. They can sign up for our e-newsletters on our website as well, get action alerts about things that are happening in their communities, as well as find out about our latest deployments.
Great. We only have a few seconds left, and I was wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add.
No, just thanks for having me on the show and for taking this issue seriously and for and for having a show that tracks animal protection issues. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Nicole. I found it really informative.
Thank you.
Thanks for speaking with us. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Nicole Forsythe, President and CEO of United Animal Nations. To find out more about the organization or how you can get involved, please visit www.uan.org.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I think that segues well into our next interview, which we're going to take another listen to, which is about bear safety in the summer. And with us on the line now, we have Tom Sayre of the Rivers Institute at BCIT to talk to us about how to keep bears safe this summer when you're out and about in BC's forests, because the bears are definitely out there. Hello, Tom.
Good afternoon.
Hello, welcome. Can you tell us approximately how many fatal bear encounters there are every year?
Oh, generally it is very, very low, and on average about one per year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one per year, where exactly?
It can vary over North America.
Okay. Last year, that's not a lot.
Yeah, no, last year, for example, we had two fatal bear attacks, both as a result of meeting up with grizzlies, and both were in, well, I believe the one was in northern Wyoming, the other was in Montana.
All right.
So those are the two fatal ones for 2010, and so far this year we've only had, we've had a few minor, well, we've had about five attacks that I'm aware of. One was a fairly major one in Alaska. The other four were relatively minor attacks.
Okay. So how often would you say that people come into contact with bears in the forest? Is it a pretty frequent thing? Or
bear encounters can be relatively frequent, particularly, you know, living in a province like British Columbia, you know, where we have both species. We have black bear and we have grizzly bear. You know, we were looking at a population of black bear at about 140,000 to 160,000 within the province. So your chances are pretty good, at least, of having an encounter. And generally, that's all it ever turns out to be. You know, you come up in close proximity to a bear, and generally they hustle out of the area fairly quickly.
Okay, and Allison and I were talking last night about bears, and she was just sort of wondering, I don't know, do you want to ask the question about how to sort of, which you're supposed to react?
I had several questions. Okay, so when, I come from North Vancouver Island, big bear country, which I was actually just there a few weeks ago, saw three bears on the side of the road. Anyways, so when we were young, in elementary school, we had classes on to tell us what to do when we encountered bears. They actually would come into the elementary school property. And we were told that when you see a grizzly bear, you're supposed to act in a certain way, and when you see a black bear, I believe it was, the other type of bear, you're supposed to act in a certain way. One way is you're supposed to act aggressive and like shout and yell, try to scare them away. The other way, roll up in a ball. Now, I always could never remember which was which as to what you're supposed to do. And in face, you know, in the face of such a situation where you're probably panicking, it's probably not good that I didn't know that. Can you perhaps give us some tips and how to even remember what to do?
Sure. Well, you know, whether it be a black bear or a grizzly bear will be dependent upon what behavior that bear is exhibiting. So if, and both bears can exhibit, say, a defensive behavior, so if you've surprised them, they'll show signs of being stressed, and that could be just simple things like a yawn, or it could be even something more aggressive, you know, like a swat, or you know, even the jaw popping, classic jaw popping, that sort of thing. So both species will exhibit that if they're stressed. So in that case, you're generally going to behave or act or respond the same way, you know, to both those types of situations. Where you are going to change your strategy is if it ends up being, say, more predatory in nature, and that's where the bear may actually be stalking you. The bear may be just, and generally, it's not going to show any of the signs of those stresses. It's going to be very quiet, very intent, say, walking towards you, that sort of thing. In a case like that, you're going to act a lot more aggressive. To try to deter the bear and give it second thoughts of trying to take you on as prey or whatever. So in a defensive situation, you want to act calm. Essentially, you want to stay calm. Basically assess the situation and try to determine what is that bear telling you, what type of behavior is exhibiting. And at that point, stand still and most importantly, don't run. And then at that point, speak calmly and, you know, and then try to slowly back away from the animal.
Is running going to make the bear run after you?
It could. Yeah, you know, when you think about, I like to use the example of, you know, if you have an aggressive dog, for example, and you were to run from it, sometimes that can trigger that chase instinct. And that's the same as, you know, with a bear, for example, as well, too. So, and not only that, but, you know, if you try running and that bear does chase you, it's going to outrun you. You know, bears can run as fast as 50 kilometers an hour in short spurts. Wow.
So unless you can run faster than 50 kilometers an hour,
do not try to run.
I don't think that's very many people.
No. So running is not a good idea. But like I say, in a defensive situation, you want to, you know, just act calmly and try to, you know, get yourself out of there. You know, talk to the bear in a very calm voice and just back out of the situation. As opposed, again, to a predatory situation, that's where you are going to act aggressively. Shout at the bear, stomp your feet, that sort of thing. Anything that will kind of deter that bear and, you know, from, you know, you want to be the aggressor in this kind of situation.
Is it a bad idea to throw things at the bear?
No. In a predatory situation, no. You know, you could throw rocks at it or whatever. You know, you're going to have to try to do whatever you can to make that bear think twice about taking you on.
So is it generally people doing the wrong thing that does sort of incite a bear attack?
Generally, doing the wrong thing could be, you know, when you're outdoors, for example, and if you're hiking, you know, not being aware of your surroundings, not making noise in the area, and then so consequently you surprise a bear. And where it can be a dangerous situation, particularly, say, for example, with grizzlies, if you come across a grizzly sow with cubs, grizzly sow will get very, very defensive, and that's where people can get into trouble. Or coming across a grizzly, for example, that might be on a carcass. It's going to defend that food, vehemently. For black bears, generally, it's, just surprising them. And, they tend to be the more timid of the two bears. And in most cases, from my experiences anyways, they've generally cleared the area fairly quickly. But sometimes, they can become defensive and, can end up, in some cases, being a bluff charge. And in some cases, resulting in contact as well.
Is it as dangerous with a black bear with cubs as with a grizzly bear, or not as much of an issue?
Not as much of an issue. And in fact, there was a paper just recently put out by Stephen Herrero and some of his colleagues where they looked at fatal attacks by American black bears from 1900 to 2009. And they actually found that, in fact, black bear sows with cubs weren't as dangerous as, for example, as the male black bears in some of these cases.
Oh.
So, but definitely female, grizzlies with cubs, it can be a very, very dangerous situation.
Because I've seen, there's a family of bears. I've seen a mother and her two cubs a lot on along the highway. I live in Squamish, so on the Sea to Sky Highway, and during the long weekend, there were about 20 people that were stopped and taking pictures because the bear was so close to the road, probably 100 feet off the road. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are people doing?
Yeah.
But I guess it's not as much of a worry, but it's still a worry that they get acclimatized to humans.
That's right, and you're still inviting trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not to say that the sow, might not get defensive and then try charging somebody to protect your cubs.
Yeah.
But it does, in the end result, it does habituate that bear to human beings, where the bears all of a sudden, don't become as fearful of them. And then that's when troubles can begin.
Yeah, it's usually for the bear. It's usually the bear ends up being destroyed after so many encounters with humans.
Yep. Yep.
We're almost out of time here, but can you just sort of tell us what are the main things that people do need to keep in mind when they're out hiking or camping?
Main thing is to, when you go into an area, find out from the locals or from the authorities, have there been any bear sightings in the area, any problems, that sort of thing. And then, it's always a good idea to carry bear spray and absolutely know how to use it. When you're out there, be alert, particularly in densely forested areas. Make lots of noise and keep an eye open for bear signs such as scat and tracks. And it's always a good idea to travel in a group. Also keep children close at hand. And as well, keep dogs leashed or at least under control. But being alert, using your brain when you're out there and making lots of noise is generally a fairly good deterrent from keeping yourself from getting in trouble with bears.
And realize that there's others out there than just us silly humans.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's right. Remember, you're...
be aware.
That's right. And remember, you're in the bear's home as well.
Yeah.
Too,
Which has to do with territorial standings as well, too.
I think it's just like you would in any... If you go into somebody else's home, you want to respect. Mm-hmm. You respect their home, and it's the same thing when you're out in the backcountry or on the trails. You want to respect it as being, wildlife's home as well, too.
Is a bear bell effective enough at making enough noise?
It can be. You probably would want something a little bit louder, and that's where the occasional shouting out or whatever would probably be a lot more effective.
Okay.
Not to say that bear bells won't work, but, if you get near streams or if you've got strong winds and that sort of thing, the sound won't carry as well as some other methods, even sometimes, although they can be a little obtrusive, but using even things like the occasional blast from a small air horn or something like that can also...
That's what I said, an air horn.
Yeah, and they've got, I think there are some marine air horns now that are actually, the canisters are refillable with simple bicycle pumps, so they can be reused over and over again as well, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tom. I think now we can stay a bit safer.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
So even though that interview was just from May, it was very interesting to listen to that again, and I hope those are some excellent tips that Tom gave us and some really great information. Hopefully it's helpful to people and you keep that in mind as you're out there because, the August long weekend's coming up in just a couple of weeks. And Allison, you have a recent news story that you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, so just a few weeks ago, so we're actually recording this, mid-July, we'll say, beginning of July. So we'll say about, I think it was about the second week of July, a friend of mine from high school was interviewed by the local news here in Vancouver and Vancouver province, because her uncle actually was attacked by a grizzly bear recently. And we were just looking up the story. It actually just happened really recently as we record this, so I thought it would be interesting mm-hmm. to talk about it. Now, what happened? I believe he lives in Bella Coola, it says, or Bella Bella, on the central coast of British Columbia. And he was out in the woods, and Carissa was saying you read that his dogs.
Yeah, it says that the dogs chased the bear to him. So what probably happened is his dogs were obviously off-leash and away from him while he was picking salmon berries, and they probably encountered the bear and then aggravated the bear because it was a grizzly bear with her cubs, which Tom was telling us can be...
Don't go around that.
Yeah, that's not...
I know if you're living in a rural area like where I'm from, too, it's common practice just to go out in the bush and pick berries mm-hmm. or chop wood or whatever you're doing there, right? The injuries that my friend's uncle has sustained are really very serious. He's in the hospital and he is recovering. In the newspaper article, it says that a fairly large chunk of his scalp down to his skull was missing, and his leg muscles were just hanging on, and suspected broken leg and arm. I mean, it's something that is really, you should take precautions,
yeah,
right?
I think Tom mentioned that you should not allow your dogs to be off leash, because that is what will happen is what probably happened here is that the dogs came upon the bear who was out with her cubs, and that aggravated her and put her in a defensive mode, and then she chased the dogs back to him and attacked him. And it does say that his dogs eventually probably chased the bear away, but it's a good idea, definitely, to keep your dog on a leash so that doesn't happen, because not only bears, but cougars as well would probably see the same thing.
And living here where we live in British Columbia, it's big bear country, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure there's lots of bears in other places. But I just know from my own experience here, and I know Carissa, she lives up in Squamish, which is there's a lot of bears out there as well, is that, you know, we live in the bear's environment, so we really need to be mindful, as Tom and I were both saying in that interview, is just be aware of the bears.
Yeah.
Just chant that mantra to you, be aware of the bears.
There's a program in Squamish called Bear Aware.
There you go.
Which is about making sure that you take
what I said.
Yeah, taking care of your garbage in the right way and taking the necessary precautions so that you're not attracting bears.
Yeah, again, where I'm from, a small community, is we've had, you know, bears are often, I remember when we were little, we had a bear come up to our garbage can at least once. And, you know, the garbage was actually put away in a container, but the bear was smart enough to lift it up and find the garbage there. And another bear charged through my parents' backyard recently. A couple of years ago, and just charged through the back fence, like didn't look for a gate or anything, just charged right through it. He had to really, how rude. But I mean,
he was on a mission
to, I don't know, pick some berries or something. But
So we actually did a piece last fall as well about bear safety surrounding garbage and things like that, that was sort of based off of some of the info that I took from Bear Aware and other municipalities. And we'll take another listen to that now.
All right, now I have a bear awareness piece to let everyone know about. As we head into the fall and winter months, now is the time that bears are foraging for their last calories to get them through the winter, and it's important that we take steps to guard against bears in urban areas for their protection as much as ours. Bears are attracted to urban and suburban areas by the smell of food, which to a bear can be anything from garbage to compost to fruit or on or fallen from trees or even bird feeders. These smells can attract a bear from miles away, and bears will return to a known food source for years to come and will take it as a reward and continue to visit towns and populated areas to get it. The result is that bears quickly become conditioned to eating garbage, compost, and birdseed, as well as accustomed and habituated to the presence of humans, becoming bolder and bolder each time that they return to the populated area, thereby condemning themselves to the eventual fate of being destroyed because of public concerns. The simplest and most effective steps to take are to keep garbage either indoors whenever possible or in a locked steel container, and to pick all fruit as it ripens to avoid the lucrative lure for bears. You should also keep pet food indoors and be sure to clean your barbecue after each use. It is imperative that we recognize that bears, as well as other wildlife,
as animals who are simply seeking food wherever they can find it, and accept that the responsibility falls to us to prevent conflicts that can and do arise every year in BC. According to the Bear Aware British Columbia website, over 1,000 bears are killed each year in this province, and the majority of these deaths are preventable, which means they're completely unnecessary. The unfortunate reality is that while in a wilderness setting, when we encounter a bear, we usually take an alternate direction. In a town or urban environment, bears are often killed simply because of public fears of what might happen. Bears aren't malicious killers, but simply wild animals looking for ways to survive. In North Vancouver, the city has enacted the Solid Waste Management Service Bylaw 6920, which requires all garbage to be safely stored so as to be inaccessible by wildlife, and that garbage should be placed curbside by 7:30 a.m. on your designated garbage collection day. You can find more information about peacefully coexisting with bears on Bear Aware British Columbia's website at www.bearaware.bc.ca.
Wow, thank you for that piece, Carissa. Yeah. It's so important.
Yeah, I live in Squamish, mm-hmm. and just the other day I was going to the video store, and I was like, what are these people doing? It was like this couple just booked it across the street, and I was like, is somebody in a car accident? Because mm-hmm. there's all these people standing around yeah. just staring, and like they got out their camera and were taking pictures, and it was a bear.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Leave him alone, you know, right. and maybe he'll go away. And rather than they're, like, calling to him, and they're like, hey, bear, what? Over here, bear, bear.
Oh, my God.
I'm just like, you're all retarded.
Right, and then if they get hurt by the bear.
Oh, they're going to blame the bear, right? And the bear's going to be destroyed. Shot. Like, people just need to use a bit of common sense. Why yeah. would you do something like that? Another time as well, I was in Whistler during Crankworks, and I went to a concert, and I came out and was going back to my hotel room, and everybody was gathered in one area, and I was like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And somebody's just laughing, like, oh, there's a bear over there down at the bottom of the stairs. People were going over and taking pictures. Like, he was at the bottom of the stairs, oh, so they all gathered at the top and right. were taking pictures and just sort of egging him on and stuff.
Oh, my God.
I don't understand what people are thinking when they yeah. do these things, so it's totally important to take a step back and
I don't understand, like, conservation, quote-unquote conservation officers, always going after bears after yeah. they've hurt a human being or something to seek them out, to kill them, yeah. as if it's like revenge.
People have, I think there's a myth that, you know, they think that once a bear has tasted human flesh, they are hungry for it. This is what my friend said to me the other day when we were discussing this topic. I was like, what?
Oh, my God.
Because we've had a bear in our backyard, because we have fruit trees in the backyard, and so we've cleaned it up.
Yeah. What I think, you know, like when people get mauled and you find out it's their fault, like yeah. the people you're talking about, they should get fined.
Yeah.
In addition to getting mauled and not have their
and the bear should maybe
paid.
Be, you know, captured and then released somewhere further away. Isn't that a much better solution than,
you know,
just
killing
them all?
How far can they go, right? It's humans encroaching on them.
Yeah.
You know, we're continuing to do that, and these areas that weren't built up like 10 years ago are now totally built up.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they going to go?
I don't know. In your backyard.
In your backyard. That's
all right. So that piece was a sort of geared more towards the fall, but there are still important things to consider all summer, especially the part about how you should clean your barbecue after each use, because it's barbecue season. And, well, I know you and I would be grilling vegetables, but most people that use a barbecue are typically grilling meat, which
yeah.
is an obvious attractor to bears.
And also, just note that fall in Canada is summer elsewhere all
yeah.
over the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe not for our fall, but, yeah, it'll still be really that in Indian summer,
yeah.
you know. It'll still be really hot, I'm sure, when we're having our fall in October and that. Like in California, where we're
yeah.
at right now.
I hope we're having a good time.
We are having a good time. We're having a blast.
Yeah, so definitely some things to keep in mind with regards to bears. Because even you were mentioning as we were listening to that how it's completely unfair that one mm-hmm. human in all of North America dies on average, as Tom
per
told
year.
Us, per year, versus 1,000 bears are destroyed
yeah.
every year.
At the hands of man versus
just
one,
because
one
people,
human on the, at the hands
yeah,
of the bear.
Because people are scared of
right.
what a bear will do. But obviously a bear doesn't really do that much. I mean, we were talking
yeah.
earlier about the person who was mauled, but unfortunately that was kind of based on his having his dogs out without a leash on and things like that, and he still survived it. It wasn't the bear killing him to eat him. Like, I don't think bears ever eat the people that they kill.
Yeah, we were talking we were listening to this, saying that, the berries eat fish. Oh, they're pescatarians.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it does happen if there's only one being killed a year. Whether that bear eats that human or not would be, you know, just one time. Sure, one bear out of thousands of bears might like the taste of human flesh or try to eat human flesh, but it's not happening.
Yeah, I think it's something that we don't need to be as scared and fearful of as we are, sure.
You're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, and we thank you for listening in while we're having fun in California and LA. So next week's show, we've decided to do a rerun because it took too long to record this show, so we're out of time. Yeah, I was going to do an encore show for next week, but maybe another time. I'll save it for next year. So we want to remind you to get onto our Facebook group, Animal Voices Vancouver. Get onto Twitter, which is Animal Voices YVR. Get onto our website, animalvoices.org, to listen to all of our past shows there. And email any suggestions you might have about the show or comments or questions or anything to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So remember to be kind to the animals. And Carissa, why don't you quickly, very quickly, introduce these two songs.
All right, so we're going to listen to Land of the Silver Birch and BC Orienteering by Said the Whale. Land of the Silver Birch is by, I think, Michael Mitchell.
My path is keen and bright, flashing with silver. Follow the water's flight, dip and swing, dip and swing her back, flashing with silver. Swift as the wild goose flies, dip and swing. Land of the silver bird, home of the beaver, where still the mighty moose wanders at will. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom diddy yada, boom. High on a rocky ledge, I'll build my wigwam, close to the water's edge, silent and still. Boom-diddy-yada, swing. My heart grows sick for thee, here in the lowlands. I will return to thee, hymns of the north. Blue lake and rocky shore, I will return once more. Boom-diddy-yada, 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 swing. Silver bridge, flashing of the silver, where still the mighty moose wanders as well. Blue lake and rocky shore, I shall return once more. Swim to the other, swim to the other, swim to the other, swim.
Taken by the woods, even though you're aware of the slippery cliffs and the big black bears and the salal. Snare is taller than yourself, ferns growing as thick as the trees. Yeah, you're looking for a flag at the top of the hill. It's a race against the light. Never travel alone.
just to breathe the air and appreciate having never met a bear. And you capture the flag at the top of the hill with daylight to spare. Orienteering comes naturally, you read the map right. Just make it all.